Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
A lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Matt Peck, also host the Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago, following every Bulls game this season. You can follow me on Twitter at Bulls_ Peck. You can follow my co-host Jordan Malley at Jordan C. Malley. And you can follow us at Locked On Bulls. Check us out on Facebook as well, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Send us some messages there. And of course, as always, 24/7, 365, that text and voicemail line is open for you, our fellow Bulls fans, for our weekly mailbag episodes. That number is 331-979-1369. Again, that number for texts and voicemails for mailbag content, 331-979-1369. We will do our best to get to as much of that mailbag content this week as possible. Lots of people flooding our inbox with mostly frustrating thoughts right now after a 2-5 start for the 2019-2020 Chicago Bulls. A few thoughts I want to get to tonight. We'll mainly talk about the loss to the Pacers on Sunday and some of the same problems we saw in that game that we have seen so far throughout the first seven games of this season. Some very frustrating signs, some very discouraging signs, given the lousy strength of schedule, and the Bulls still, despite that, being 2-5 as their November schedule looks to get a lot tougher, including a visit from LeBron, AD, and the 5-1 Los Angeles Lakers to United Center Tuesday night. Got to touch on, again, and I know I talked about them last week, but the continued struggles of both Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen, not to mention a dud game from Otto Porter Jr. after he finally looked like the better version of Otto that we saw come over in the trade last season, followed that up with a dud against the Pacers, and the rookie Kobe White, who lots of Bulls fans are clamoring for to be thrown into that starting lineup. He has not looked good since that breakout game, their first win of the season against the Memphis Grizzlies. So, all that on deck. Man, I mean, as if Sunday weren't depressing enough already, for those of you out there who are Bears fans in addition to Bulls fans, a double dose of depression. Sports Sundays in the fall, October, November, they are some of the best days for sports fans. You get football, you get basketball, you get hockey, you get everything. And sometimes you are just dealt a nasty, nasty result. Following the Bears' pathetic loss to the Eagles, we had to watch a pathetic Bulls loss to the Pacers. Another very winnable game on this very soft schedule to start the season. The Pacers are a middling team, at best, right now, without their best player, Victor Oladipo, who won't be back for several more months. You could say they had a little bit of momentum coming into this game. They had won their last couple coming into this game against the Bulls, but they are still a team that was down arguably their top three players, or certainly at least three of their top four players, because in addition to not having Victor Oladipo, they did not have Miles Turner, and they did not have Sabonis. I mean, the Bulls were the healthier team, and on paper, at least theoretically, the much more talented team. I mean, like, Gogo Bitadze, certainly some people thought that the Pacers got a steal when he fell to them in the draft as late as he did, but an untested rookie hasn't looked fantastic yet at any point this season. And, I mean, you're getting bullied around because the Pacers are outplaying your front court with Goga Batazde and Jakar Sampson, former Bull, briefly, Jakar Sampson. And look, you know, they had some nice games. T.J. Warren gave him 26 points. Brogdon, the newcomer who came over from Milwaukee, got, 22 points and 7 assists. He had himself a nice day. They got 13 off the bench in addition to 15 rebounds from T.J. Leaf. But this is not a tough Pacers team to beat, who, by the way, also just went 8 of 26 from behind the three-point line. Well, the Bulls didn't really managed to take advantage of that because the Bulls went 9 of 30. This is just another game that makes very little sense when you think about what the Bulls should be able to do against weak opponents versus what we actually see on the court. I'll get to Markkanen and LaVine in a bit, but I mean, the biggest performance that jumps out to you in this Pacers loss is Otto Porter Jr. Finally had a strong game when the Bulls were able to beat the Detroit Pistons after having a very rough start to the season. You know, we're already hearing about the Bulls dealing with Otto in like a load management type of situation. We're not sure if he is battling with some kind of nagging injury that they're not really telling us about, but he looked bad, just awful in this Pacers game. 1 of 10 from the field, 4 points. 1 of 10 for 4 points. He did have a few rebounds and a few assists, but still, not at all the contribution we were expecting from Otto Porter Jr., who many people thought was the, you know, despite the ceilings that we talk about with players like Wendell or Lowry or Zach, as far as established talent, most people thought that Otto was the top three talent on this team coming into this season. He's not playing like it. And this team functions a lot better when Otto was playing to the height of his capability. And that's why we talked most of the offseason about how important the depth was behind Otto, because there didn't appear to be any. So God forbid Otto goes down or gets hurt or misses extended time this season. Well, we didn't even really think about Otto not playing up to the standards that we were expecting. It was all just, oh, please Otto stay healthy because there's no depth behind him. Now it's like, well, even if he's healthy, or maybe he's playing with some kind of nagging injury, we're just not getting the production that we expected to get out of Otto Porter Jr., and it is hurting this team tremendously. And then when you do talk about the depth behind Otto, we thought we might see our first appearance of one Chandler Hutchison after battling through a hamstring injury in the offseason and into training camp. The Bulls activated him, put him on the active roster, and then didn't play him. Boylan gave him a DNP coach's decision in this loss to the Pacers, which is interesting when you think about how much this team has struggled on the glass. Yes, Chandler Hutchison is limited offensively from what we saw in his rookie season, but if Boylan keeps harping on them getting out-rebounded every night, if there's one thing that Hutch can give you that could probably help, especially when you compare it to these minutes that we're still seeing from Boylan using that three-guard lineup of Chris Dunn, Ryan Arcidiacono, and Kobe White, not getting a whole lot of rebounds from those guys. If there's one thing Hutch can do, it's rebound. So, again, why activate Hutchison and then not play him? Not alter up that rotation a little bit? Not to mention, once again, saw 10 minutes of Luke Kornet and no Daniel Gafford to be seen. Rebounding. Rebounding is the problem. Okay. Try something different. Well, so we did get a little bit of clarity on Hutchison. This is per Casey Johnson, insider for NBC Sports Chicago, was asking Boylan about it after the game, and Boylan said that he wanted Chandler Hutchison to be in uniform for the game to have the feeling of being ready, being game ready, but that really there was not a real plan of playing him any minutes. So I guess like going baby steps from, you know, practicing with the team again and being fully cleared for 5-on-5 and all that kind of stuff, and then putting him in his jersey and making him active so that he has the feeling of being game ready before actually making him game ready and using him. I mean, I guess I see some logic to that. I don't know if it's necessarily super useful to put that little step in between making him active after being, you know, inactive. But to me, that raises the other big question of, my God, how bad does Boylan think Denzel Valentine is? Because in order to make Chandler Hutchison active on the roster Sunday against the Pacers, they had to make Denzel Valentine, in addition to Felicio, inactive. So Boylan made Hutch active, knowing that he had no intention of playing him, but so that he could be active to sit there in a jersey and warm-ups instead of sit there in street clothes, he made Denzel Valentine, who is theoretically completely healthy and available, inactive. So to me, that was the bigger woe of Hutch being active and not playing. It is the fact that Boylan, in order to do that, had to make Denzel Valentine inactive. We have seen barely any Denzel. We've only seen a couple of garbage time minutes from Denzel so far this season. He did not have a great preseason. Maybe he's in Boylan's doghouse. Maybe it is still a conditioning factor, because in his extended run in those preseason games, it looked to me like Denzel still does not have great conditioning coming back from that injury, and also did not have a whole lot of lift left in his knees when he was attempting his third and or fourth and or fifth shots of the night. So maybe Boylan saw that and thinks that Denzel is still not ready. But we have heard nothing. No updates about Denzel. Boylan hasn't really talked about it. I'm not sure why it hasn't been asked about. Maybe, you know, when we get to the next Bulls shoot-around, leading up to this game against the Lakers, we'll get some kind of clarification on Hutch being active but not used, and Denzel even still knowing that we're going to use Hutchison being inactive. What does that say about Denzel Valentine? For a team that's, again, struggling to rebound, struggling to shoot threes, if there's one thing, and maybe two things, that Denzel can give you, it's depth behind Otto, who's not played very well so far, and some three-point shooting off the bench, and maybe a little bit of rebounding help off the bench. And yet, no. He was inactive for the Pacers game so that Chandler Hutchison could sit on the bench and not play in warm-ups instead of in street clothes. It's a little alarming to me. And by a little alarming, I mean, oh dear God, how much trouble is this team already in? Okay, before we get to the games that Zach and Lowry had, wanted to give a quick shout-out to one of our sponsors, Manscaped. Manscaped is number one in men's below-the-belt grooming. You can get 20% off and free shipping with the promo code LOCKEDON. That's all caps locked on at manscaped.com. The worries continue when it comes to the two players that should theoretically be the two best players on this team. Rising stars of this rebuild. At least one of whom many pegged to have their first all-star season this year. Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen. Look, we've seen some good, some bad, some borderline great, and some borderline awful when you look at the complete body of work of Zach LaVine so far. In this game against the Pacers, he led the Bulls with 21 points, but it wasn't pretty. He needed 20 shots to get 21 points, and that was only because he went 4 of 8 from behind the three-point line. But he only took two free throws. He had 6 rebounds, a couple of assists, 3 turnovers. But Zach LaVine continues to get exposed on the defensive end. For all of the talk about becoming a better defensive player, being sick of people talking shit about his defense, having confidence in being a good on-ball defender, and he isn't a terrible on-ball defender, but we have continued to see, whether it's just mental lapses or not paying attention or not knowing what's going on or not knowing what his role is, LaVine continues to get beat off the ball. Teams are making, you know, back cuts like crazy against LaVine. He gets lost. He's not sure when to help. He's not sure when to switch. He's not sure when to rotate. The off-ball defense from Zach is just as bad as we've always seen it. There's been no improvement. And then offensively, yeah, Zach can hit you some big shots. And it's the Bulls appearing to be so far, it's, you know, you live or die by Zach LaVine making very tough shots like he did in the win against Detroit. The Bulls almost cough up that game. LaVine hits a couple of big threes down the stretch, high difficulty shots, and the Bulls get the win. But we have also seen in some of these close losses in games that the Bulls absolutely should have won, LaVine's offensive decision making be really questionable, if not downright awful, late in games. And that's always been a concern for those people who see not as high of a ceiling for Zach LaVine. The whole talk about, well, does he actually make his team better? Does he make his teammates better? Can he be a reliable go-to guy down the stretch? I talked about, you know, the pros and cons of having LaVine be like a ISO hero ball guy for this team down the stretch last week. And again, we have seen that when LaVine tries to be that guy, it doesn't go well. When this team gets away from their ball movement that works in some of their stretches earlier on in games, and the ball starts to stick a little bit, Zach LaVine is one of the biggest culprits. And I understand that when the game is on the line and when you need a bucket, the, you know, default de facto answer is, all right, we'll put the ball in the hands of your best scorer and let him go get a bucket. And that's sort of what we're seeing with the Bulls and Zach LaVine right now. But he's, as what we've seen, not good enough, not elite enough as an ISO hero ball kind of player to make that strategy effective. Boylan's talked after a couple of these losses about just, you know, the ball getting stuck. And just look, pay close attention, especially down the stretch late in games, late in close games. When the Bulls are passing the ball around, Zach LaVine, when he gets the ball, will hold it. Sometimes he'll do silly things, like he'll dribble a couple of times and he'll pick up his dribble. He'll over-dribble. But sometimes he is the biggest and worst culprit of the ball is moving, it gets to Zach, and the ball stops moving. And again, it's live or die. Sometimes that means that Zach is going to hero ball and make a difficult shot. But that has been the thing that happens less frequently so far than what we've seen more frequently, which is Zach LaVine hero ball goes poorly. Bulls offense struggles to score down the stretch. Hell, in one of these losses to a terrible Knicks team that, by the way, still has only that one victory over our Bulls, the Bulls failed to score a single point in the final 3.5 minutes. Plenty of questions about late game execution, Boylan's rotation late in games, but it is too obvious to ignore. For as much as we want to hype up LaVine and we're excited about LaVine coming into this season, that he is certainly one of the more responsible parties when it comes to this team's execution or lack thereof late in games. And it's a worry. Meanwhile, Lauri Markkanen can't even get on the floor to close fourth quarters. We saw Boylan in back-to-back games close with Thad Young instead of Lauri Markkanen. Markkanen has been struggling, and Thad Young has been playing well. So at least that is one logical thing that you could point to when there are so many questionable things going on with Boylan's rotation. But it is still a concern. Yes, the facts are the facts. Thad Young right now playing better than Lauri Markkanen. So close with the guy that you trust right now. Boylan trusts Thad Young. But that's the big elephant in the room question and concern is, well, Markkanen's supposed to be a cornerstone of this franchise, of this rebuild. Supposed to be one of the stars of this team. And right now your coach doesn't trust him to close games. And Lowry had another tough day against the Pacers. 29 minutes. 11 points on 3 of 9 shooting. 6 rebounds, and then blanks in assists, steals, and blocks. Couple of turnovers. 11 points on 3 of 9. And this guy is supposed to be one of your star players. Now, there are some rumors going around that that Markkanen could be playing through some back soreness right now. And we have seen through his first couple of seasons that there have been issues Markkanen dealing with pain, soreness, even some slight spasms at times with his back. And that's always an injury that worries you. Tall players, big players, having back problems never goes well. Never a good thing. Rarely ends well. Rarely is a thing that goes away entirely. Most players just tend to play with those sore back problems through most of their careers. But right now, I mean, at least that might offer an explanation as to why Markkanen is looking so soft, so disengaged, so unaggressive. Because, look, Markkanen has not shot the ball well. His three-point shot is not falling. He was 1 of 4 against the Pacers on Sunday. And, like, I think so far this season, he's not even shooting 30% from behind the three-point line. And so if that's not working, if the three ball's not falling, what should Markkanen be doing? He should be attacking the basket. He did go 4 or 5 from the free throw line on Sunday, so I guess that's better than nothing. But to me, and then specifically with this Pacers game, it made just no sense to see the depleted front court of Indiana. I mentioned it. You're starting Goga Batazde at center. You're starting Jakar Sampson in the front court. And, you don't have Turner. You don't have Sabonis. I mean, there were times in Nate McMillan's rotation where he was playing our old buddy Justin Holiday as a small ball four. Justin Holiday rotates in to play some minutes as a small ball four. And what does Jim Boylan do? He takes Markkanen out instead of letting Markkanen play and go at Justin Holiday in the post? Let him attack that mismatch? What about that makes sense? What about that makes any fucking lick of sense? So you can criticize Boylan and his unawareness for you taking advantage of those mismatches. You could have had Markkanen attacking Holiday, playing the four. And some of it is this dunce of a coach who doesn't know how to make adjustments in game. And some of it is a concern about, is Markkanen just going through a bit of a rut right now, or is he playing hurt? And is that the reason that he has not been that aggressive attacking the basket and, banging with bodies down low close to the basket? Is that the reason that he's just kind of shying away at times and trying to rely on the three-point shot, which right now is not falling? All of these things are very big concerns. And look, we're 7 games in. There's still 75 to go. There could be plenty of this that sort of, fixes itself as we progress. Maybe there is a little bit of a sore back thing Markkanen is dealing with right now. Maybe it gets better. Maybe Markkanen comes out of this shooting slump. And if Markkanen sees the ball go in the hoop a little bit more, he raises his confidence and he raises his aggression with more confidence in his game. But we certainly saw the Markkanen that we all love in game one against Charlotte. 37-15. Where'd that guy go? Where the hell did that guy go? I don't know. And it's very, very unsettling. All right, last topic of the day. I wanted to take a look at Coby White and his last 5 games since the breakout game against Memphis, because it hasn't been pretty. I continue to see Bulls fans on Twitter clamoring for Boylan to start Coby White, assuming they would rather see him playing alongside Zach LaVine in the backcourt and have Satoransky come off the bench. And let me preface all this by saying, look, I'm very high on Satoransky. I've been defending him so far this season, although the returns immediately have been a little underwhelming. There was a lot of hype for, a guy like Satoransky because of what people thought he could do for the more important players on this roster, namely Otto, Zach, and Lowry in that starting lineup. And he has been solid. As far as his, assists and playmaking, Satoransky's already proven, in my opinion, that he has one of the highest basketball IQs right there, along with Wendell Carter Jr., and best floor visions on this roster. Had 9 assists in this loss to Indiana on Sunday. And he, I think, fits much better with LaVine than Coby White would. Because if you just have LaVine and Coby White playing off of each other, they're both guys who need the ball, and I think that they would clash. The part that Satoransky has struggled with is the part that everyone on this roster has struggled with, which is he can't knock down a damn shot. And that was supposed to be the other part of what made Satoransky effective in that starting lineup, is that he could be a very efficient player playing off the ball and letting Zach LaVine dominate at times, while also using his opportunities as a facilitator and a playmaker to get good looks for his teammates. He's done that part. Satoransky just hasn't knocked the ball down very well. Hopefully that can turn around. I have faith that Satoransky's shooting slump that he's going through right now will end, and we will start to see the well-rounded reason that Satoransky can be the player that Bulls brought him here to be. But I will admit that he has not played to the height of his ability either. And maybe there was a chance that some of us were overhyping Satoransky when he arrived. But Coby White is not ready to be a starter in this league. The Memphis game was awesome. His third quarter performance in that game saved the Bulls from an 0-2 start. Another embarrassing loss. And then he and Zach LaVine finished things off in the fourth quarter. And that game was awesome. It was fun to watch. You know, his first NBA game of his career, he has 17-7. He follows that up with 25, 6 boards, and 2 more assists. Looking very efficient with his shots. In the 5 games since that win over Memphis, let's just see. In the loss to Toronto, 8 points on 3 of 14. The loss to the Knicks, 5 points on 2 of 5. The loss to the Cavs, 8 points on 3 of 12. The win over the Pistons, 9 points on 4 of 12. And the loss for the Pacers Sunday, 1 point on 0 of 6. And in those 5 losses combined, he has more turnovers than assists to go with the measly point totals and the awful field goal percentage. Look, don't get me wrong. I'm still excited for the player Coby White can be in the NBA. And he has flashed the brilliant speed and athleticism and craftiness, making plays, creating scoring opportunities for himself, and even, and you know, in small glimpses, showing his abilities as a passer. But this 5-game stretch, to me, is the proof that those people who are saying Coby White should be this team's starter at point guard, they're not looking at the full picture of what Coby White is and how young and still inexperienced he is, and how he can still have these nights where he's taking bad shots. I mean, we saw his poor shooting performance in Summer League and we're a little bit worried about it, but said at Summer League. And then he comes out of the gate just, you know, white hot in his first couple of games. Especially that Memphis game where he went 10 of 16 from the field, went 4 of 8 from downtown. But in those 5 games since, 0 of 4 behind the line against Toronto, 1 of 3 downtown against the Knicks, 2 of 7 against Cleveland, 1 of 6 against Detroit, 0 of 2 against Indy. It's not consistent. It's not a consistent part to his game. And to me, it's still like the biggest thing is he can't provide some of the scoring punch off the bench, and even doing so just by attacking the rim and being crafty and not feeling like he has to rely on taking a bunch of threes when he's not consistently hitting them. To me, and again, a young rookie with a lot of potential. A lot to be excited about when you watch Coby White and see what he can do on an NBA floor. this five-game stretch, I mean, those who still think that he should be in this team's starting lineup, like, what are you seeing that I'm not seeing? Because the flaws are very apparent. And again, that doesn't mean that I don't like Kobe White and I'm very excited for what he can be for this team moving forward when there's very little to be optimistic about right now. I love watching Kobe White play. The kid's exciting. But he is not ready for that workload and not ready for that pressure of being a starter this soon in his NBA career. We have seen the flaws to his game in this stretch after his breakout performance against Memphis. He's not ready. There's just a lot about this Bulls team that looks not ready right now. You know, Boylan, after the loss of the Pacers, said something about how, like, the Bulls didn't come into the game with the proper focus and the proper fear of their opponent. Like, maybe, you know, referencing the fact that the Bulls thought it could be a cake victory because the Pacers were down three of their, you know, key players. But what about the Bulls coming into that game should have a mindset of a cake victory at all? They have scraped by in their two wins against two bad teams in Memphis and Detroit, nearly coughed up the Detroit game. You can say the same thing about the Memphis game, and then have bad losses across the board to bad teams, and the one decent team they've played, they got blown out by 20+. So what kind of team with that, you know, with that 2-5, you know, 2-4 record should have any kind of, you know, oh, this is a cake matchup, we're going to go to India, get an easy win? Who on this roster in their right mind would have that thought? It's ridiculous. There's no such thing as a cake matchup for this Bulls team this season, apparently. The Bulls are 2-5. They started last season 2-5, despite having a less healthy roster that had theoretically less talent than this one to begin with. You had no marketing. You know, Chris Dunn was on paternity leave and then got hurt. Bobby Portis got hurt early. Hoiberg had a shattered roster out of the gate, and the Bulls started 2-5 this time last year. The Bulls theoretically have all these healthy pieces, a fully healthy roster, and they have the same 2-5 start, by the way, against the third easiest schedule in the NBA through this many games. They are 2-5 with the third easiest schedule in the league. Look at these teams that we've lost to. None of these are world beaters. These are the teams that you're supposed to beat. For a team that talked about being competitive and, you know, the competed at a high level phrase that Paxson loves to use, and talking about making the playoffs at media day, and you start 2-5 with losses to a depleted Pacers team, Cavs, Knicks, Hornets, And you eked out two victories against two other bad teams, and you get blown out by the one decent team you face? And we have to listen to Jim Boylan sit there and tell us after one of these awful losses, hell yeah, I've seen growth. Where? Where have you seen growth? This team is regressing, not progressing. This team is going backwards, not forwards. And some of it, yes, could be Markkanen's playing poorly right now. Maybe he's playing hurt. Otto Porter Jr. is playing poorly right now. Maybe he's playing hurt. Zach LaVine still doesn't look like a guy who can close games for you. He did it against Detroit, but more often than not, he fails to close games for you. And that offensive strategy of letting LaVine do hero ball isn't working for you. But more so than the players, and again, I'm not absolving the players of responsibility, because Lowry, LaVine, and Otto, your three most important players, collectively have played like crap over the span of seven games. So it's not, you know, all on Boylan. The players need to play better. But some of Boylan's decisions and his rotation are just head-scratchingly dumb. The man cannot coach. The man hasn't proved to us in any capacity that he knows how to win an NBA game from the head coach's seat.
a lot of people, and myself included, kind of gave Boylan a bit of a pass when he took over for Fred because that roster was just dog shit. And he was like, we're going to tear everything down and start from scratch. Okay, fine. Didn't agree with giving him an extension because he did nothing to prove that he deserved that extension. But guess what? Now, Paxson and Gar and Michael Reinsdorf and the whole goddamn crew have been so, you know, glowingly complimentary about Boylan and vice versa. Boylan's been sucking up to them since day one when he took Fred's job, that they are all stuck in the same boat. The Bulls front office made their bed by just saying Boylan's the right guy for the job. And now, guess what? They look even stupider than they have in the past for insisting that this is the right guy to get the job done. Because I hear all these Bulls fans, you know, tweeting at me, hitting up our inbox here for Locked On Bulls mailbag saying, you know, over under on number of days, number of games until Jim Boylan gets fired. And everything we're hearing is this is their guy. They believe he's the right guy for the job. So either you stick it out and give Boylan at least one full year coaching this team, or you recognize that he can't coach, fire him, and once again, make yourselves look like incompetent fucking idiots because you're the ones who just glowed about how great he was. He was a perfect fit. He's exactly what this organization needs right now. Oh, wait, no, he's not. We're bad at our jobs. We don't know how to hire coaches. There was no coaching search before they hired Fred Hoiberg. There was no coaching search before they gave Jim Boylan an undeserved extension. These people are morons. And they are getting exposed with Boylan's inability to coach this team right now. Unless there are multiple players playing hurt and they are hiding that from us. And again, prefaced, you know, like put a little asterisk on this rant if you want to. The players should be playing better than they are. But maybe, just maybe, this team is regressing largely because the guy in the head coach's chair doesn't know how to get the best out of this collection of players and make them play like a team. They are so far less than the sum of the parts should be. And it's on the coach, and it's on the people who picked this coach. And guess what? It's on the people in the owner's suite who are still letting those people pick coaches and run this team. It's the same story, you know, same bullshit Sunday with some different toppings. It's the same problem this organization has had for decades. Incompetency that starts at the very top rung of the ladder and works its way down all the way to seeing what we saw against the Pacers on Sunday. It's gross, and quite honestly, I'm getting sick of it. But again, to those of you saying, man, when is this team going to fire Boylan? How, you know, and that's the funny thing about those of us who are, I consider myself a realist, not a pessimist, not an optimist, but from the, you know, doggable, as C. Red Fred likes to call them, nation, the, you know, hashtag FireGar Paxers who never talk about anything else, uber pessimist, all the way to Fred and his jolly band on the big red bus and all of us in between. If there's one thing everyone among us seems to agree on right now, it's that Jim Boylan can't coach. At least that's one thing he's done. He's brought us Bulls fans with differing opinions together on one topic. Boylan needs to go. But guess what? He ain't going anywhere because these buffoons tied themselves to this guy and were so convinced that he was the right man for the job. Congratulations to all of you. Take a fucking lap. I'm done. I'm out of here. Thank you for listening. Hopefully, the Bulls don't get embarrassed against the Lakers on Tuesday night. But if they do, we'll be here to talk about it with you. Hopefully, we'll get Jordan back on tomorrow's show to preview that Lakers game. And in the meantime, hit us up on that text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Appreciate all of you loyal, regular listeners. Appreciate all of you new listeners who may be tuning in for the first time this season and are underwhelmed by what we have seen so far. If you are, I don't blame you.
follow us on Twitter. I'm at Bulls_Peck, which, by the way, pinned at the top of my Twitter profile. You can find a link to my Movember campaign page. I am doing Movember. NBC Sports Chicago asked me and a few of their other on-air hosts to do it. It's not pretty. Certainly the first couple weeks are not going to be pretty. Stash comes in pretty slowly for me. But if you have even just a couple of bucks to spare, I would greatly appreciate it. It's for a great cause. And you can find the link to donate at the top pinned tweet on my Twitter page at Bulls_Peck. You can also find the link to donate in my Instagram bio. You can find me on Instagram at MeatPeck, MeatPeck. Follow Jordan on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, and we are at Locked On Bulls. Shoot us an email, lockedonbulls@gmail.com, and of course that text to voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Let's hope for better days ahead, Bulls fans. Things are bleak, but I love y'all anyway. Until next time, peace out.
We are trying to develop and win.
We got a young, developing team that I believe in, and we're going to keep working.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com